Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a new themed Thursday. It's when my co-host, the Idillionaire Patrick Davis, who comes up with all the musically themed days of the week, he comes up with a really creative one for new themed Thursday. And this one is actually, the new theme is all about the celebration of the anniversary of America winning the space race and stepping on the moon for the very first time. So all the songs reference the moon in some way, form, or fashion to celebrate the anniversary of the moon landing. So we appreciate Patrick and all of his creativity. And that, I believe that's this weekend will be the anniversary of the moon landing.
Yes.
Not exactly today, but this weekend. So, yeah, I mean, that's... let me see. What's the I want to say there's a new show coming out actually about the conspiracy theory part of the moon landing. Is it a show or a movie that's coming out about it? I'll have to get you the name because I want to say I saw that preview not too long ago, and maybe this is probably why they're timing it out with the anniversary. So I didn't realize that, but that actually may be something happening. But I know there are some folks out there who want to jump on the grassy knoll with the conspiracy theory. You guys know I love a good conspiracy theory. I'll sit on that grassy knoll all day, every day with you. I'm not sure I'm there with the moon landing, but, you know, hey, man, to each his own. That, yeah. If you believe in that conspiracy theory, I can't judge you because I got some that I believe in. That I got something like, nope, that I'm believing in that conspiracy theory. That's just one that I believe in. So unless it's really crazy, I'll, you know.
Yeah, one's harmful now.
Yes.
In 2024, it's true. Not, that one's not as harmful as some other conspiracy theories.
Yeah, like some, yes, some
incite
are very,
violence
right.
And other things.
Great
and
point.
You're like, that one,
yes.
I don't know if anybody's inciting violence over stuff that happened 55
years ago.
Well,
we just had an assassination attempt on the president.
Yeah. So.
And there are tons of conspiracy theories out there about it, yes. Already. So you know when the JFK thing happened, it must have been the same thing. Like, literally, we react the same way. We just kind of start throwing it out. And it's because we don't have the information. And, you know, God bless our government, but they're not very transparent with anything like that. And why should they be? That's national security issues, stuff like that. I get all that. But that's, you know, with that vacuum of information, you know, and transparency, you get people kind of making stuff up. And
they're going to fill in the blanks.
Now, yeah, exactly. You're right. It's like, you know what? This makes sense to me. So that's it.
That's fact.
I'm accepting this fact.
Yes.
And then once they accept that, then it's hard to actually present the material to change their mind. The problem with our society is not that we make up our minds about conspiracy theories and stuff like that. That's fine. That's actually healthy. And a lot of that's intellectual curiosity. It's just really good. Like, you should be intellectually curious. You should want to learn more. You should be curious about stuff and want to learn why and how. But the problem with our society is nobody changes their mind once they got it made up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Once they make their mind, it's like, nope, that's it. It's like, well, what if you're presented with information that tells you your opinion is wrong, or that there's a better way to do it, or that, you know, your logic is flawed, and we won't do it. We society won't do it enough. We don't do it politically. We don't do it, whether it's socially. Sports is one of the only places I think people do it a lot of times, is sports debates. Somebody gives you the actual stats. It's breaking down like, hey, look at this. I'm telling you, Dak Prescott, he's a top 10 quarterback. Look at this. Boom, 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 boom. You go, you know what? It's a good point.
Yeah.
A valid point.
No, that's I like.
We would not do that in politics at all.
No, there was a meme where someone posted a thing that was like, my favorite thing is when – is that somebody posted, I think, you know, my favorite is when people post facts that people will change their mind, and then the person responded with, well, actually, there's multiple studies that show that that is not true, and they posted the studies, and then the person said, yeah, well, I'll still believe it. And they're like, see, you're proving the point.
I posted you. I gave you the receipts. I gave it to you. That's the study. Read it for yourself. Nah, I'm
still
good.
I still think if people are given facts that they'll believe it.
I'm gonna believe this random Facebook post with no cited sources at all. That is the fact that I'm gonna believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we are. So it's okay. I love us. All right. Let's get right to it. Before we get to, we'll get back. I want to hear about Quinn, because we've heard from Quinn earlier, but we'll get to some Sark sound about Quinn, and then we'll hear from Quinn, the starting quarterback at the University of Texas, and then we'll have Raj rant of the day. We'll talk about some of those rankings from the highest the basically the top 10 highest ranked receivers in the NFL. There's a new list that's out courtesy of that Jeremy Fowler survey of execs and coaches and scouts. We'll get to a little bit of that. We get some Raj Rant of the Day and talk some NFL. But mostly getting back to SEC Media Days, we'll get back to some of that audio. But first, the Horn headlines. So let's get educated. Let's get informed. Let's get updated on all the top stories of the day with Patrick Davis. And we'll come back and dive into some SEC Media Day discussion.
All right, your Horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Team USA improved to 3-0 after a 105-79 win over Serbia yesterday. Steph Curry led the way early, scoring USA's first 9 points before finishing with 24 on the game. Serbia kept it tight, tying the game at 28 with a buzzer beater before the end of the first quarter. USA was able to pull away in the second quarter, getting a 14-point lead before half. Bam Adebayo had 17 points, while Anthony Edwards had another good game, scoring 16. Team USA now heads to London for its next warm-up game with South Sudan on Saturday. In the MLB, teams will get ready to restart their season tomorrow with the Rangers welcoming the AL-leading Orioles to Arlington, while the Astros are heading to Seattle to take on the Mariners in a series for control of the AL West. And that is your Horn headlines.
Horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Grass is growing and yards need mowing. We got deep discounts on Gravely, Toro, Hustler, and Steel zero-turn mowers this month at Top Gun. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
All right. Thank you, Patrick, for the Horn headlines. We appreciate those. All right. First, let's hear from Sark talking about his quarterback, Quinn Ewers. This is cut 28, Patrick, if you'll have that ready, please. Sark has been very complimentary of Quinn. And when he's asked about Quinn's growth, he actually starts talking more about his leadership and intangibles and immeasurables instead of the actual, you know, development of a skill set or any element of his on-field play. He usually starts with the macro of the man before the player, which I think actually is important. And Quinn's got a new swagger to him, and he should, right? So I always say swagger is when you got, you know, when you got confidence to spare. That's swagger. You can sprinkle some of your confidence and give it to others because you got so much of it. Hey, it goes past confidence. That's VY had a lot of that. And it can be a quiet swagger. It didn't always have to be outgoing. It didn't always have to be the charismatic, you know, largest personality in the room. That can be some guys. But for Quinn, I don't think that's the case. But he is definitely carrying himself with a different swagger now. And I think that's something that Sark talks about. So here is Sark talking about Quinn's progress as the quarterback in Texas.
I'm really fired up for Quinn. You know, I think back to when he arrived and he was just trying to survive, in essence. And we kind of threw him out there and he did some really good things and had some days that weren't his best days. And that's part of developing and growing. And then you go to year two and you watch how he played in some of our biggest moments and when we needed him to be really good. And then coming into this offseason, as much as it's been his physical development, I think his personal development, his emotional development is something that has instilled a ton of confidence in everybody in our building. You know, he walks in that building like he is the starting quarterback of the University of Texas for a top five football team. And I think that has permeated throughout our locker room. Even the way I think he's carrying himself today is drastically different than maybe how he carried himself a year ago. And so, to me, that is probably the biggest thing. Now, do I want more touchdowns, less interceptions, higher completion percentage? Of course, all those things. But I think those things are a byproduct of his preparation, are a byproduct of the confidence that he exudes and the way he goes to work, his relationship with his teammates. And I give him a lot of credit. When you have, you know, this many new receivers and working with those guys, you know, I was on the grass with him yesterday watching these guys throw the ball around, and it was like, it looks as good or better than before. I mean, it's fascinating to watch, but I think that's a byproduct when you have a veteran quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, Texas, one of the few schools that, in terms of continuity, they have a multi-year veteran quarterback, a multi-year starter at quarterback, and he's been with the same offensive coordinator, with the same play caller, which is Sark, and a lot of continuity ahead of him and above him in the hierarchy. where he doesn't have that continuity is at wide receiver, which we'll hear from Quinn talking about that. But first, let's hear from Quinn talking about why he came back to school. He could have left, went to the NFL, didn't have a guaranteed first-round grade. Even Mel Kiper said he would have suggested that he went back to school, and he had a second-round grade on Quinn at the time. The belief is that this year Quinn's going to take a leap that will cement him as a first-round quarterback, potentially top quarterback overall. At least he's got a shot to be that guy. Here's Quinn and his thoughts on his journey and why he came back to University of Texas this season.
Yeah, I think one of the main things for me was just getting more experience under my belt. And, there's kind of a line of demarcation for guys who really have success in the league. And obviously there's some guys that have rare accounts of it not being this way. But, there's a line kind of like number at 25 starts that, guys, you really see like a jump in how their career went, and I just kind of wanted to give myself a better chance to have a long and successful career in the NFL, because I don't want to be a guy that just comes and goes. I want to be somebody who's remembered.
Ooh, I like that. I want to be some guy that comes and goes, just gets my bag, and I'm done. I want to be remembered. He's talking about legacy. That's a maturity thing for Quinn. I hadn't heard Quinn speak about legacy and talk like that, imply that since he's been at Texas, but just shows you that he's in a different mindset, as he should be. But the wide receivers, that's the turnover, around him. That's what I think ultimately is going to determine how quickly, Quinn starts to achieve at a high level and how quickly this offense reaches its ceiling is going to be this rapport and the chemistry with the wide receivers. So here's Quinn initially when he's asked about what's your rapport like with the wide receivers? How has that gone this offseason with so many new faces?
Yeah, no, for sure. Getting Tommy down with different guys. Because, with that receiving crew besides AD, that was year two for me with those guys. So I was comfortable with how they were getting in and out of breaks. And like you said, it does take time to get used to that. I think we've done a pretty good job so far, and I think it's only going to get better, especially during camp.
That is the hope. During the spring game, not that it means a damn thing, but he and Isaiah Bond, they didn't look like they were on the same page, and like they had great chemistry yet, but still got plenty of time to figure that out. Here's Quinn talking about Isaiah Bond as a receiver and his skill set that he brings to the table.
Well, I think he's obviously he's capable of making big plays, like we saw last year. And he's my age, so we connect in that. We were supposed to come out the same class, but I left early anyway. He's fast. He's got good route running, and I can tell that it means a lot to him. And he wants to go. He wants to go far with this football thing. So it's always good to have guys that want to succeed and want to play at a high level on your team.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of eyes on Isaiah Bond. So there'll be other guys like Silas Bolden, Ryan Wingo coming in, who also will have opportunities in his expanded wide receiver rotation. We know that. We heard that from Sark. So here's Quinn talking about some of the new faces. We know Ryan Wingo is a freshman, but he's a five-star guy with a lot of potential, and it's going to be impossible to keep him off the field. But then Silas Bolden, who missed the spring but has come in this offseason. Here's Quinn talking about those two additions and what they bring to the table.
Yeah, starting with Wingo, the maturity that he has at such a young age and his ability to understand what we want to do on the offensive side of the ball and his ability to go up and make plays is, I haven't really seen anything like it. So for him to come in the way that he has, I'm excited about, what he's going to do for this university. And then Silas, coming from Oregon State, I think he's going to be a huge contributor to our success for sure. I think he's going to do a great job wherever Coach Stark ends up putting him. I think he's going to do awesome things with surprisingly, he's a shorter guy, but he'll go up and catch those 50-50 balls, which was surprising to me, but it's always good for me to see.
Yeah, Ryan Wingo is the interesting one. He's going to play sparingly, I think at the beginning. I just think he'll play more toward the end of the season, of course, because I think once he gets more comfortable and familiar with the offense and they can move him around different places, he may end up being your red zone weapon. He's your biggest receiver that's in that rotation, that we project to be in that rotation. So he may be the guy they look to in the red zone. To me, kind of reminds me of Roy Williams. Not the same player. Not the same player. And not the same playing style. Just in that the last receiver that Texas had that had those combination, the combination of rare elite traits all in one. Right? Usually, you know, wide receivers have an elite trait, it's one or two. Like it's Xavier Woods has got his speed. That's his elite trait. A.D. Mitchell's a bit of a handful because he's got more than one, right? We found out he's got speed as an elite trait. He's got his body control is next level, too, so he can go up and make some of those Cirque du Soleil-type catches at time. So most receivers, they don't have, like, you know, five or six elite traits. Ren Wingo does. The size, he's got some world-class speed. He's got the jump ability to make contested catches. He's just got the ball in his hands. He can be a yak daddy. That's something Xavier Worthy had that was really good. A.D. Mitchell is not really a yak daddy with the ball in his hands, right? So that's not one of his elite traits. But you get a receiver that's got four or five elite traits that I have to account for as a defender. That's overwhelming. And that's what Ryan Wingo potentially brings. And that's why he reminds me of Roy Williams. Because Roy Williams had like four or five elite traits. Size, he was big. He had strong hands. He was fast. He was a track star, so he could leap too. So his leaping ability was crazy. I had a 40-inch vertical that was unbelievable, so he can win 50-50 balls and go up. He was underrated, actually, with the ball in his hands. They would run reverses with him. Go ask LSU. Nick Saban's LSU defense, how he runs with the ball in his hands. That's to me is what Ryan Wingo just kind of reminds me of. Texas hadn't had a receiver that has that many elite traits in a while, right? When you had like Lil Jordan Humphrey, what did Lil Jordan Humphrey and Colin, what did they lacked, right? And Colin Johnson, they lacked speed. They didn't have the elite trait.
Yeah.
They didn't have change of direction as an elite trait. They were big bodies though. 50-50 balls, big bodies, big hands. Great body control by Colin Johnson. Those were the kind of receivers that Tom Herman liked. So like I said, usually you don't have a receiver you got to deal with that many elite traits and defend with Ryan Wingo. He's a problem. What else is a problem is the SEC can be a problem, especially with that transition for Quinn heading into the SEC. So Quinn was also asked about the difference between the Big 12 defenses you're going to face and the SEC defenses that you have to face. And how you're going to adapt to it. Here's what Quinn Ewers had to say.
Yeah, well, I think one of the main things is just the talent overall. I'm not saying the Big 12 wasn't talented, but I feel like in the SEC, there's a lot more first-round guys. And there are a lot of good coaches that put them in that position to go to the first round. But, I think it means a lot to these guys. And, you know, they don't do like Big 12 was kind of a lot of 3-3-5, and you know some teams in the SEC do it, but some teams don't. So that's going to be an adjustment that we're going to have to take a look at for sure.
All right, that's Quinn talking about the difference between the Big 12 and the SEC defenses. And when Jackson Dart also spoke about the transition into the SEC, he also spoke about the drop eight philosophy that is really popular in the Big 12, the three high, three down safety concept and defensive package that is really successful and really popular in the Big 12. Texas saw a lot of it last year because it countered Sark's offense really well in past seasons. And you don't see that as much. And you're not going to see the drop eight philosophy. 3-3-5 essentially is right there, right? You got three down, and you can drop that back eight. You don't see that as much in the SEC. You're going to see more four down. You're going to see more traditional looks and more of your NFL-based defenses rather than some of your more exotic progressive concepts that you would see in the Big 12, which is more experimental. And which is what I liked about the Big 12, right? We talked about this because there's such a separation in talent between Oklahoma and Texas in the Big 12, that ecosystem. Everybody's trying to adapt to those two apex predators. How do you close the gap between those two teams who have so much more talent than you do? Well, you got to do it schematically. You got to do it with innovation. You got to be creative in the way you do it. And that's why you would come up with all these you know, very creative ways, or whether it be bringing in air raid offenses like they did with the Mike Leach, or using the three high, three down defense, using hybrid players, whatever it may be. And that's kind of what the Big 12 was built on, which was interesting. All right, so one thing that is going to be, I think, a real advantage offensively, not for everybody, but for the teams that can utilize it correctly, will be the new headset communication. We know that, and just they basically have taken the NFL rule, so it's pretty much the same rule, where you can talk to the quarterback, the head coach, or offensive play caller, whoever they choose, can talk to the quarterback up until a certain amount of time. They'll shut off the headset communication. I believe it's 15 seconds left on the play clock, and then after that, the quarterback is on its own, which is how it is now in college, where you don't have headset communication. That's an NFL thing. So Quinn was asked about the headset communication and how it is going to work, at least between Texas. What's that protocol? Here is what Quinn Ewers had to say.
Yeah, we've used the in-helmet stuff. It took me about a week to get used to, but you know, after that first week, I really enjoy it, and I really like having Coach Stark in my ear, and I think that's just going to make things a whole lot easier, you know, on my end. And it's going to be good for him to be able to communicate things like what he's seeing in the back end, or you know, what protections he likes in that ordeal, you know, mid drive, instead of you know, having to call a timeout or whatever it looks like to you know, communicate those things with me.
Yeah, I think it's going to really help the 2-minute drill for quarterbacks.
Yeah, I can see it.
Right, the 2-minute drill is just going to be, I think it's going to boost it tremendously now, because they'll get the call from the sidelines like everybody else will get it from the sideline with the hand signals or the poster boards or whatever. And now the quarterback can just hear from the coach, and you can just kind of walk you through it, like literally in your ear. All right, here we go. Da, da, da. And you're already going up tempo, so it doesn't give the defense time to adjust. If you are talking to them while they're at the line of scrimmage, you know, I mean, that gives the defense time to maybe disguise something and move some pieces around. But if you're just going straight up hurry up mode, 2-minute mode, I mean, you're running to the line of scrimmage trying to snap it as quick as possible. And literally, I think the coach is talking to the quarterback as he's running to the line of scrimmage to get things set up. So I think that's what will probably help the most. But I think it'll be advantageous to the offense more than the defense.
Yeah, and I could see, you know, in a situation where you're going down on a 2-minute warning or 2-minute drive, in the 2-minute drill, and you know, you maybe Quinn doesn't see that one of his wide receivers on the out because the progression he's watching is on the other side. He doesn't see one guy get blown past, and Sarkin in his headset go, "Hey, watch on your other side on this next one." Like he's destroying his, like that. This is a mismatch, and he could point out a mismatch in the 2-minute drill that you would never normally have to call a timeout, and then they could switch. The other team can switch that out, so you can't really communicate. Hey, watch out for that. This is dominating right now. I think you can just sit in the headset and be like, turn to your right.
Honestly,
or turn to your left.
Honestly, Patrick, you're right about that. Even outside the 2-minute drill, right? Yeah. You have plays that, and we see this all the time, just going back and watching the game, you see it on replay, and you go, oh, man, that tight end was wide open.
Yeah.
And how does Sark communicate that, you know, now? Well, you have to get him to run to the sideline if he does that, or send a player in with the message like, hey, man, on this play, you got to go watch, you know, the tight end, or you need to go watch the slot receiver on the side. He was wide open. Their adjustment, they didn't see him. And now you can tell the quarterback real time and then say, let's run it back.
Yeah, and you can hurry up to not let him switch rotation.
And exactly. We're not going to let him switch it. We're going to do the exact same thing and see if that's the same choice they make. If that's the same choice they make, then you know what's going to be wide open. It's going to be wide open.
Yeah, and I mean, because you can do that, and if you run the quarterback over and the other coach sees it, he can switch a personnel. Or if you run a player out, then you have to make the defense. So any of those things. But if you would just have it now, you could just run that play again. And now he's going to be on the other side being like, do not leave him open again. They're running the same play. Don't leave him open again.
Yeah, there's so many. Yeah, oh, man. Like I said, we haven't even really gotten a chance to, I think, explore the infinite advantages there are for offenses being able to do this. I think there are some advantages for defense, but I just think, you know, I'm a defensive guy, and I'm telling you, there are way more advantages to this communication for the offense than there are to the defense. And Sark, matter of fact, let's hear from Sark, because Sark talked about the headset communication as well, and how it would work for him. What is he going to communicate to Quinn? Like, what's gonna, what actual pieces of information, bits of information are you giving him via the headset right before the play, right before they have to cut off the headset communication? Here's what Steve Sarkisian had to say.
Yeah, no, I think naturally the play call. And the thing I try to do, and I think I've been fortunate to having spent time in the NFL and work with Matt Ryan and in those things, is sometimes you just don't want to get paralysis by analysis of giving him so much that he can't even operate the play. And so the subtle little reminders are helpful. And maybe that reminder's not for him. Maybe that reminder's for C.J. Baxter. Maybe that reminder's for D.J. Campbell at right guard. You know, you can get to some of those things that you know are vital on that play. Maybe it's the reminder of, hey, I don't want to snap this ball until there's 1 second on the clock, okay, because it's third down, and if we have to punt, I don't want – you know, he'll know why I'm saying that to him. So there's little subtle reminders like that. But in the end, it also gives us an opportunity to huddle and maybe give him a few more opportunities to audible on his own, where I don't have to, because I can give him the audible into his headset. Hey, if it's this, check to this. And he can allow to go do those things. And so there's a lot that can go into it. We're fortunate, like I said, when you have a veteran quarterback, it's a little bit easier to manage that stuff.
All right, there you go. That's Sark talking about the – and he seemed to echo a very similar opinion of Brent Venables, who said, I don't want to overwhelm whoever I'm speaking with who has the green dot headset communication. I don't want to overwhelm them with too much information. Football is a game you play on instinct. A lot of it's muscle memory as well. And you don't want a player who is playing their process to be slowed by thinking too much. All right. A lot of it should be natural reaction, instinct, because you're practicing these scenarios and this technique over and over and over again. And once you're, you know, in that situation, a lot of it should be instinct and just kind of natural response, spontaneous response to situations based on your football instincts. And I think you eliminate that, or you slow that process. You stunt that process when you are overloaded with information. It slows you down. You don't want to do that. So I get that from both sides, and I think that's actually pretty wise. All right, last clip here before we get to the break, and we'll get to Raj Rant on the other side. And Raj Rant will play – there's one clip from Jaday that I want to play and one from Kelvin Banks. We'll get those before we get out of here. But also we'll get to some NFL discussion. They've now wrapped up those top 10 player lists they're doing for ESPN based on the survey of execs, coaches, and scouts. We'll talk about what teams have the best, the most top 10 players based on that list. We'll get to that. But first, Quinn was asked about the Texas A&M rivalry. And he had an interesting little anecdote here about his family's view of the Texas A&M rivalry. Here is Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, I mean, it stopped playing back in 2011, if I'm correct. I was pretty young. I think I was 8. But, you know, just hearing, like, stories and what my dad and family has talked about it, you know, my dad actually said that he thinks that him growing up, he believed that the A&M game was bigger than the Red Rivalry game. So I'm excited to have that game back. It's going to be a cool experience, especially going to Kyle Field, you know, Thanksgiving weekend. And I know that place is going to be rocking, so we're all pretty fired up for it.
All right, there you go. That's Quinn talking about the Texas A&M game. He did remark that his dad told him at one point Texas A&M game was bigger than the Texas OU game. Before I got to Texas, maybe it was, but since the time that I've been at Texas, hell, in 2000 when they won the national title, Oklahoma did, that game has been considered a more national and a more marquee rivalry than the Texas A&M game. But I have said, and I've been on the record, this season, and it's an outlier, but this season, the Texas A&M game is bigger. But it won't be bigger than Texas OU next year. And prior to that, that has not been the case. But this year, it feels bigger, just this season. Speaking of, that actually relates to the topic for the Big Fat Poll today, which we'll also address on the other side. All right, we come back, we'll get into Rod's rant of the day and all of that and more right here on the Rodcast, featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real!
My God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm!
Bro, oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. I want to get to some NFL, just say a couple of NFL topics here. I know we've been SEC Media Day heavy because Texas had their showing at SEC Media Days. Speaking of the NFL, there is an NFL SEC-related story, but we'll get to that later. So Jeremy Fowler has been doing his survey, or at least releasing his survey, of NFL execs, coaches, and scouts, and they are ranking the top 10 best players at every position in the NFL, and they've been doing this for a couple of weeks now. We went through the quarterbacks. We even recently talked about the wide receivers. Now that they've done all the position, here's the tally. The teams with the most top 10 players at each position, according to this list, the 49ers have the most. See, the 49ers have 9 top 10 players, according to the NFL execs coaches on the list here. Says the Lions have 7, along with the Chiefs and the Ravens. Eagles have 6, Texans, along with the Texans, and then Packers with 5. Man, that's a lot. This is why the 49ers are, you see why I'm going to say desperate times, because they're really successful. They keep making it back to the Super Bowl, and they're winning the NFC. But it does feel at this point, if you're the 49ers, it does feel a bit hopeless, because what more can you do?
Yeah.
What can you do? Like, you had a 10-point lead on, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City Chiefs twice. Now one of your weapons wants out. You can't let Brandon Ayuk leave. And so there is somewhat, at least for the fans, they're starting to feel like, man, are we just going to keep reliving this nightmare over and over again to get to the Super Bowl and feel like we're cursed and just lose to Patrick Mahomes again? It's, like I said, the talent's there. I mean, they're loaded. They got all the talent they need. Now they got the quarterback. And maybe, you know what I think the hope could be? The growth of Brock Purdy. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the growth of Brock Purdy. If Brock Purdy does actually continue to evolve and he becomes a top 10 quarterback, that's revolution, because they haven't had one of those, right? They haven't. He's the best quarterback of the group they've had, with Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, Trey Lance didn't work out for him. So if he can take a leap to being a top 10 quarterback, and I believe on that list he was like an honorable mention, so he was outside the top 10 honorable mention, but if he becomes a top 10 quarterback next year, that's the leap. Because he's got to outdo Patrick Mahomes, mostly.
So they need 10 guys on the list.
So, yeah, you're right. Because I was right. Yeah, pretty much. That's basically what I'm saying. Yeah, no. That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. The Chiefs have 7, so the Chiefs got, you know, they got their fair share, too. But, yeah, that's it. You're right. So I'm saying, yes, I'm saying they need a 10th against the Kansas City Chiefs. Because Patrick Mahomes counts. Honestly, to me, this is the question. Is there anybody on this list who is there a greater distance between the best player at their position and the second best? Is there a greater distance than any position other than quarterback in the NFL between the best and the second best?
Probably not.
Probably not. Like, he counts, to me, he almost counts like another extra spot. Right, yeah. It's almost like it's 1, and he should be 2 as well, and then you get to 3 and 4. He's that good. Because I said there's a distance. I mean, is Justin Jefferson that much better than Tyreek Hill?
No, well, I mean,
some people probably say Tyreek Hill's better.
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
yeah.
That's kind of 1 and 2. I'm talking about 1 and 2 at that position.
Yeah,
right. Like, I don't know if there's a greater separation between 1 and 2 in any position in the league as there is between the top quarterback. We don't even know. We don't even think we even agree who number 2 is. Some people say it's Lamar Jackson. Somebody else would say it's Joe Burrow.
And that's what's the thing is, like, the difference between 2 and 10, I don't think is as far
Oh, because yeah, they got Dak at 10 at quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. If Dak's at 10, I don't know if the distance is that much. You know what I mean?
That's a great point. It may be a shorter. There may be a shorter gap, or at least a wider gap, I should say, between 1 and 2 at the quarterback position than there is between 2 and 10.
Yeah, because like, because 2 and 10 in the wide receiver is a monumental gap.
Yeah, let me get that.
Because that's 10 is Ayuk, and I like Ayuk, yes. But he's he's not remotely close to the top category.
No, I agree. No.
So just looking at those two areas, like if you say Dak and Joe Burrow, I get Joe Burrow's a better player. Anyone would take Joe Burrow over Dak. I get that. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying the distance between the two, Dak is still getting MVP votes. Dak is still putting up numbers. Dak is still doing a lot of things. So I don't know if that distance is monumental, where if you say, if you were to say, well, we need a quarterback and you got to give up this much to get this guy and this much to get this guy, versus if you say the difference between Tyreek Hill and Ayuk. Well, no, Tyreek Hill's going to be the guy.
I'm with you.
I haven't looked, but like the defensive tackle, I have to imagine the difference between 2 and 10 is humongous. Just because there's not that many great defensive tackles.
That made me want to look at, I got to go look at the D tackles and see, because Chris Jones obviously be at the top of that list.
Yeah.
And see who they have at number 2. But still, like I said, the gap won't be as wide as
well. And because Chris Jones is only on there because Aaron Donald retired.
Aaron Donald just retired. Yeah, exactly.
Because otherwise, Donald's won.
Yeah, and that used to be a gap between him.
Yeah.
And Chris Jones. And Chris Jones is awesome, like literally unblockable at times. And there was still a gap between those two. Yeah, I think that's why Kansas City's just so damn tough to beat. That's part of it, man. It really is. All right. That may be something we'll get into. Maybe tomorrow I'll actually do the research on number 1 and number 2 on those lists and see what the gap is. But that's how good Patrick Mahomes is right now compared to – and on that list they had Joe Burrow as number 2. Oh, man. And Joe Burrow is awesome. But Patrick Mahomes is that much better than Joe Burrow. And on the O-line, that would be tough because they got Zach Martin as number 1 on the O-line. And they didn't do – oh, yeah, they did interior offensive line. So Zach Martin's number 1. Maybe that one. I got to go look at Falcons' Chris Lindstrom, but maybe that's one, actually, where there's a sizable gap. I mean, Zach Martin's a Hall of Famer. So maybe that's one. Because offensive tackle, Trent Williams and Penei Sewell. Penei Sewell's a monster.
Yeah.
Penei Sewell's great. And Trent Williams, though, that may be another one, too. Trent Williams is he's in another universe altogether, too, in terms of how he's been the best left tackle in the game of football for a while now. So anyway, there you go. So I thought that would be interesting to get into because the 49ers, just based on that list, they far and away have the most talented team in the NFL. Hell, remember, based on all pros and, the all pro list, the Cowboys, they had 9 all pros. They had more all pros than everybody else. And we saw how far they got the Cowboys, too. Not far enough. I wanted to get to, I don't know if we have time for it. We might have to play you guys more Jade and Kelvin Banks tomorrow. And I promise we'll get to it. Because just a couple of clips I want to play. They didn't have a lot of clips to play, but there are a couple that we didn't get to. And I promise we will. We played pretty much all of the Quinn and Sark sound they wanted to get to. So we can get into that tomorrow. We'll still be talking SEC Media Days because we'll be reacting from the news today.
We still get Arkansas and A&M today. There will be questions about Texas in both of those. You play Kentucky, so you can get some questions on that one as well. And we'll see if they ask Auburn about Iron Bowl versus Red River rivalry.
I know
which one's easier to say.
You brought up the number, because I've heard people talking about this, about how many teams at SEC Media Days have been at our coaches. Have been asked about Texas.
It was, I believe it was 7 of the 12 is what I had read.
They had gone already?
Yeah. They, like, at the podium had been asked about.
That's crazy. And your base is going to be, it's going to be 3 more guaranteed, almost. So that'll make 10.
Yeah.
Because you said,
10 out of the 16,
obviously, Arkansas is going, it's going to be Arkansas, it's going to be A&M, and then somebody's going to ask Kentucky about playing Texas, because they play Texas this year, so on schedule. So it'll be 10. Wow. that's documented. That's on stage, you said. I bet in breakout sessions it was probably everybody. If you
on Radio Row or somewhere else, yeah.
Yes. I haven't listened to all the breakout sessions, but I bet that's the case too. All right, we come back. We'll have our we'll have actually who said that when we come back. That's when Patrick plays pieces of audio from the sports world, sometimes beyond, and based on the context clues or familiarity of the voice, we're supposed to identify and recall who said that. We'll have that when we come back right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn. Welcome back to the Rodcast. New theme Thursday on the Rodcast. That's where my co-host, the Idillionaire Patrick Davis, he plays jams that devoted to the new theme. And the theme is a celebration of America winning the space race and the moon landing, which we'll celebrate that anniversary this weekend. So a new theme Thursday devoted to that great accomplishment. So we appreciate Patrick hooking us up there. Also, we appreciate Patrick hooking us up for the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. Final results of the Big Fat Poll of the Day, and I got to admit, they are surprising, or at least not for now, the final results, but final results for us on the show talking about them. Which true road game scares you the most next season for Texas? Right now, Michigan is leading the poll. 40% of the folks who voted said that Michigan is the road game that they fear the most. A&M is second at 36%. Then the Arkansas Razorbacks to Vietnam, 19%. And 5% say Vanderbilt. And I know that's a troll job. I just don't know why y'all not taking this poll seriously, man. I don't like that. All right. Thank you, Patrick, for the top for the Big Fat Poll today. Let's get to who said that. That's when Patrick plays pieces of audio. And based on the audio, sometimes from the sports world, sometimes beyond the sports world. Based on the audio, the context clues, or the familiarity of the voice, you're supposed to identify and recall who said that.
There's no easing. Like, he's going to have to get out and be ready to go. We got a lot of competition on this offense. Brent Veach and Coach Reed did a great job bringing a lot of competition in. And Xavier, I mean, he got a lot of mental work in these last few weeks that he had during OTAs and minicamp, but it's time to go now. And I mean, y'all saw with Rasheed last year and some of the throwing up days he had. I mean, we're gonna push you to the limit and prepare yourself to be ready to go for the season. And that's not just him; that's everybody. And everybody has to have that mentality when they come into camp.
Oh, that's Patrick Mahomes, and he's talking about Xavier Worthy. Xavier Worthy's been dealing with some injuries. That's why he said mental reps. First, he had a hamstring injury, so he's been dealing with that. So that was tightly wrapped. He injured that in May. And he's been dealing now with a left hand sprain. It's a minor injury, but still he's catching passes, and his leg is wrapped up, and he's receiving kickoffs too. So he's there, but he's dealing with some minor injuries. So there you go. A man Xavier Worthy and Patrick Mahomes, that could be a deadly connection. As a Texas fan, I love it. As a Texans fan, I hate it.
As a fantasy football fan, I'm not sure yet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't play fantasy. Yeah, if you're a fantasy, that is, you know what? They got Hollywood Brown there now, too, and Rasheed Rice. Really,
yeah, we know how many games Rasheed Rice is going to be suspended, though.
Ding, ding, ding. And that's why Xavier Worthy being injured early, not a great thing, because he was supposed to take some of them targets.
Yep.
And some of those reps that obviously Rasheed Rice is going to be out for. All right. Good stuff there, Patrick. As always, we appreciate you. We appreciate all you guys out there for listening as well. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We'll talk about it right here on the Rodcast. We love you guys. We mean that. Take care of yourselves. But more importantly, take care of each other. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same channel. Hook 'em and peace.
Ready for the next episode. Hey.